There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over a million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show on this Tuesday, 9 states, 66, talking college football. If we DeLorean ourselves back to 1986, there was a quarterback at NC State. They're in the ACC. Quarterback at NC State named Eric Kramer. And for the season, he completed 52% of his passes for 2,092 yards. He had 14 touchdowns and 16 interceptions. He was first-team All-Conference. 52% completions, 14 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, first team, all conference. Folks, he was ACC Player of the Year. So when I make a reference that Haynes King, if he could go back a few decades, all conference, Haynes King would be a Heisman Trophy winner. Problem is, in modern day, when you throw 16 interceptions, when those words come tumbling out your mouth, oh yeah, I threw 16 picks. Well, I'm going to need some more information or else you just can't be my quarterback. It's like a doctor, do no harm. But he is a scintillating, intriguing athlete, and there's a lot going on right for Georgia Tech right now. Want to welcome on right now, jacketsonline.com. It's a Rivals thing. It's Kelly Quinlan. Kelly, welcome back, friend. How are you today?
I'm good, Chuck. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. Talk about the uneven year of Haynes King, because he is a talented kid. He can do things. He's got physical skills, and he's got a lot of experience now in two big-time conferences. What is he as a quarterback last week of March 2024?
So it's interesting. He's a guy that he basically was playing his first really extended play last year. He was almost like a freshman as an older kid. You know, he had started some games at A&M. I guess maybe more like a redshirt sophomore or something like that, or true sophomore, and just in terms of where he was, but his experience. But what's interesting about the picks, like you were talking about in the lead up, you know, I would say, I think off the top of my head, like almost more than half of them happened in three games. So it was sort of interesting. At the beginning of the year, he was real sharp. He had a good interception to turnover ratio. And then they all happened in losses, I think, like the Bowling Green game, the Clemson game, games like that. I think BC. Yeah. Those were the ones where all the picks came. And he's just got to straighten that out, because, like, if you take that stuff away, they win two more games probably, and are not in the Gasparilla Bowl, but in like a legit bowl game. So I think it'd be done. He's just, you know, made a lot of pressed and forced the football at times, and he was real locked in on his initial read at times, and that kind of messed him up. And I think that he got a little cocky probably as the season went along, with just being able to make those throws and having success early and force some balls. And hopefully he can make that leap. This is what you're looking for in year two with him, is to make that leap, cut down that ratio, get it into more in line with what the rest of the league does. And I think they can, you know, really improve the offense with that.
So, I mean, there's a lot of impressive-looking kids physically. I mean, Jeff Sims was a good-looking athlete. But tell me what you think is possible with him when you see him run, because there are windows where you're like he had 5 minutes against Miami that was just scintillating, and then there's the rest of the game. Tell me what you think is the blue sky if that consistency comes.
You know, what's interesting with Haynes, and not a lot of people know this, is he went into last season, really got to Georgia Tech with like a foot injury, played the entire season with it. And at some point he kind of had to figure out just to like kind of gut through it and run. And if you notice, in a lot of the games, they ran him kind of in the second half of the game. I think they were just trying to protect that a little bit, and he was trying to protect it. And then he got enough confidence or got healthy enough to where he was comfortable running, and it really opened up his game quite a bit. you know, tremendous athlete, very fast, has a good nose for where to go with the ball on the ground as a runner. You know, he isn't afraid to run to the sticks. He's not trying to slide too early. I think he's been pretty good at reading all of that stuff. I think he has a good understanding of kind of down and distance and the situations in the game. I think it's why he's a good red zone runner for them. I think he can be a guy that can run for 700 yards, if 800 yards, if he's healthy and stays healthy. But it'll be interesting to just see if, like, that's part of their game plan or not. I don't know if they want to run him that much. That would be kind of an interesting discussion point with, like, Buster Faulkner, the offensive coordinator. Like, are you comfortable running him that much? But I think he could, and it would open up a lot of stuff for their offense.
JacketsOnline.com. It's where you go when you want the best in Georgia Tech info. You're a fan of a team that plays Georgia Tech. Go there. Kelly's got it. Kelly Quinlan again, JacketsOnline.com. So you mentioned Buster Faulkner there, and he is seen as a riser, a coming star in the coaching ranks. Who was really kind of sniffing around, calling his cell phone this offseason?
So Notre Dame, Kentucky, those teams. Here's the thing with Buster. Buster turned down jobs when he was at Georgia, like kind of, you know, those like G5 OC jobs and stuff. He was waiting for an opportunity. He's very happy living in Atlanta. He's got a kid that's a high school quarterback in the state that's, you know, pretty talented, that's leading his team. He wants to kind of keep him there. So it's going to take kind of a heaven and earth move to get him to move. I think short of the job in Athens opening up and them wanting him, I just didn't see anything that was going to motivate him to jump. And people threw his name even with the Georgia State head coaching job. Just wasn't interested in any of that stuff. He has a career trajectory he wants to follow. He kind of jumped around jobs early in his career. And I think he understands that if I do well at Georgia Tech, I can become a head coach, which is his ultimate goal. So, like, he's riding it out. You know, maybe when a big job opens next year somewhere, maybe he's more interested. But I still think he's got probably another year and a half, 2 years at Georgia Tech.
All right, flip it around. D.C., Tyler Santucci. There are folks that, like, my hand's raised. I've got to know him last year during the Clemson-Duke game. Tell me what you think his DNA is. If we, like, what are we going to see on the defense? Like, oh, okay, that's what Santucci's about.
The tough, really good run fits, very fundamentally sound, which has been something that's really been lacking with the previous defensive staff and even under Jeff Collins. Like, they would just, you know, have these terrible busts in their run fits, give up, like, these long runs. None of that stuff really happens with Duke when you watch Santucci's defense or what Mike Elko did, his mentor. They just keep everything in front of them, make plays. They're very tough, very physical on the defensive line, rotates a lot of guys up front. And that's what they're trying to build. They're building out their depth on the defensive line. They upgraded it linebacker with some bigger guys, some guys who can run a little bit better. And he's going to scheme to his personnel, which is a big thing to me, which was kind of missing in the past at Georgia Tech too. Like, you've got to go with what you have. You're not going to have, you know, four 300-pound defensive linemen in the game at the same time. You got to figure out how to use what you got. So, I've been really impressed watching him get to coach a little bit this spring. The detail, like how focused he is, like how much he slows things down for guys, even to just make sure they're taking the right steps and those kinds of things. Coaching linebackers in particular, in his case, it is really encouraging to see, because that's, you know, what's killed them a lot of times is that middle of their defense with linebackers and safeties, you know, getting out of position, not being in the right positions, and that's given up a lot of big plays both in the air and on the ground. So I'm encouraged. They're very hard-nosed. He's an old-school coach. He likes to yell at people and do, you know, make sure they're paying attention. And it's encouraging for me to see. He reminds me a lot of Brent Key, actually, in his coaching style.
All right, so over the years, I've asked you about a lot that the outward perception of Georgia Tech, either the football program or maybe athletics in general, whether it be financing, boosters, recruiting, facilities, whatever, and you've been candid. You're like, Chuck, that's accurate. No, that's just perception. That's off. So they lost to Stafford to Auburn. and Brent Key lost, I think it was the wide receiver or the running backs coach to Athens?
The wide receivers coach went to go coach running backs in
that
Athens.
That's what it was. Yeah. And I was told two different versions. One was Brent Key looked at each of them and was like, I can replace them. The other was, well, he didn't have the resources to fight to keep them. I don't care about the individual, those two guys. What is the situation there? I mean, he kept Buster Faulkner. Is that just still a perception people want to lay on the program, that he can't fight to keep his assistants?
It was 100% perception. He could have matched whatever. One of the scenarios is very, very detailed. I can't really get into it, but they were happy that person left. The other one, you know, he could have matched. He chose not to. I feel like they upgraded at the receivers coach position with Trent McKnight. Like, I think he's going to really help coach that group up. They need some player development in that room that's been lacking really since Buzz Preston left from Paul Johnson's staff back in 2018. Like, they just haven't had a lot of player development on the receiver side. And, I think that he upgraded his staff in a lot of areas. They're still actually making some off-the-field hires that will come out on April 1st that are pretty interesting. And, you know, Brent has money. He has a pool of money that he can spend however he wants, and he chose who he wanted to keep and who he didn't want to keep. And, I'm very encouraged by the decisions he made. I agreed with them. As someone that covers the program, seeing it from the outside, I thought he did a good job of kind of handling, fixing what needed to be fixed, which he focused really hard on the defense and then made some adjustments on the offensive side of the ball as needed, and really kind of fixed his support staff as well, where I think there was some issues with guys that maybe were left over from Jeff Collins or just not bought into what Brent Key was, you know, trying to build. And so you've got to have everyone on the same page, and I think he's done a nice job of that. And they have money. Like, I was at an event last night for the what they call the Edge Center, which is like the students, you know, athletic center.
So
and they're
the north
building
side
a new
of the,
one, tearing it down.
The north end zone.
Yeah, they're tearing the whole thing down, building a new one. The guy Thomas Fanning, they had an event for him last night, and there's like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars being invested in their athletics program right now. They're trying to position themselves to compete and be at the highest level, and, you know, with all the chips that may fall in the next few years, I think that's a really wise move on their part.
The Edge Center, for everybody, it's their football administration and whatever, and it's like hooked onto the side of the stadium. Kelly, I'm glad they're tearing it down. I don't believe I've ever walked in that building without getting lost. Like, it's the smartest people.
Yeah, it's like a giant maze.
It's awful. I was like, the smartest people in Atlanta designed this thing, and it's the most confusing building I've ever been in my life. So I'm glad they're tearing it down and building something new. I appreciate the insight, brother. Thank you.
No problem, Chuck. Be good.
Kelly Quinlan. Everybody has their, and there's usually a name on it, the so-and-so, and sometimes we're now to the, you know, Joe Smith family or, you know, whatever. But the Edge Center is Georgia Tech's version of that, and at Grant Field, Bobby Dodd Stadium, the north side of the north end zone, the Edge Center, and it's where all the administrative offices and coaches' offices, and I was in there one, well, I tell a Chan Gailey story. Yeah, so that's where all the coaches are and everything, and so there's always reason to go in there. It's where the athletic director's office is. Been in that building, I bet you 150 times. Have never walked in there without getting lost, and it was good because Kelly's down there dang near every day, and he's like, "Oh, it's a maze." I was like, "Good to hear." I thought it was just me. Maybe I'm a slow learner. And I was like, "The smartest," but they have a nuclear reactor on campus, but they can't figure out hallways. It's awful. Like, I see where I need to be, but there's no way to get there. All right. We're going to break. Continue next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Green 1010 XL yonder Jacksonville. He was on talking Florida Gators. Kelly Quinlan from Rivals, Georgia Tech. Duncan Newsmaker line will bring us Tim Hall, our good friend from 97.1 FM in Columbus. He hosts something called the Buckeye Show. I believe we will talk Ohio State with him when Tim Hall is on at the bottom of the hour. And that is certainly going to include Jeremiah Smith. He's the next one, man. He just, that's what's happening. He showed up and he was an early enrollee. And I've talked about this element before. And with wide receivers and quarterbacks, they're the shortest list possible of any two positions on the field. They're the last ones that this happened to. But every so often somebody shows up and he's just better. I mentioned Calvin Johnson. Adrian Peterson is a great running back example. 2004, he was a freshman, and everybody was like, okay, he's the best running back in football. He might have been. Calvin Johnson, was he a freshman 04 too? I think he was. And it was like week two or three at Clemson, and they were like, okay, he's better than everybody on their defense, so just throw it to him in the end zone. Go look at his night against Clemson. And he was a freshman. So that happens sometimes. In even Ohio State, it's where it's supposed to happen. Jeremiah Smith, so we're going to talk about that. Kalen DeBoer is very happy for the Hoops team's success, I believe. Y'all keep looking over there. We're doing spring practice. Have y'all noticed, the athletic department, it's high cotton, man. It's good times over there. And everybody's getting new contracts. And if you haven't seen, Bruce Pearl's got his, and then Nate Oates. I don't think I've talked about this. He's a basketball coach, and we were probably busy doing other stuff. But Nate Oates got a new contract, I'm going to say a month ago, say, or 2 weeks. But he just got a new contract. Kalen DeBoer obviously got a new contract. He just got hired. If you take a look, because they're public, and if you're public, they've got to show how you're spending the money. Kalen DeBoer with a new contract in January. Nate Oates just a few weeks back. If you look at the difference in buyouts, and I'm talking not if Alabama whacks the head coach, I'm saying if you look at the difference in buyouts, if the head coach decides, you know what, I got something better to do. I'm Kalen DeBoer, and I'm going to go coach the expansion team in Portland. I am Nate Oates. I'm going to go coach at a bigger program with a more established history. I'm going to go save UCLA hoops. Does UCLA hoops still need save? Are they savable? Do they still matter? Does Indiana hoops, does it really matter to a kid? The buyouts, if they leave. Folks, look at the difference in buyouts if Kalen DeBoer tips versus what Alabama's athletics, the leadership on the university side in athletics, decided they wanted the buyout to be for the head coach in basketball. This is Alabama athletics telling everyone, we're not a basketball program that can keep our coach without a monstrous, almost prohibitive buyout. Kalen DeBoer will owe Alabama $3 million if he leaves in 2026, for instance. It's like maybe it's $5 million in 24 and then four. And so in 2026, $3 million if he leaves. Nate Oates, Alabama would be due $18 million from somebody if Nate Oates leaves for another coaching job. The message is, if you're the football coach at Alabama, you're the beneficiary. If you're the basketball coach here, a lot of other places are a better spot. That's what they're saying. They're saying if you're an elite head football coach, then we will be a great fit together. We will be equals. If you're an elite short list national championship caliber head basketball coach, then you most likely will be attractive to Duke after they move on from whomever. So that's what they're saying, is that we can't keep you just because you're the coach here. The Alabama head coach, I'm the head football coach. I may look around. You do that. And by the way, I don't know, I'm bringing Heath in. Heath, I was looking at the Nate Oates contract, and I'm sure that you looked at it. I was just doing something completely different this morning, and so I wound up looking at his contract, and then I was like, wait a minute, that number, that buyout can't be right. The bigger picture, Bill Self, Calipari, who would you would expect? Bill Self, Calipari, then Nate Oates and Bruce Pearl. Are the Alabama and Auburn basketball coaches supposed to be two of the four highest paid coaches in that sport?
Probably not, but that's the whole thing why Nate Oates in particular is because that's the perception I think that has been out there is if you're Kentucky and you and Calipari go sideways, then where are you going to go? Oh, well, you'll not only grab somebody who's been competing in your conference, but also a guy that you say, well, if he could do that at Alabama, just imagine what he'll do here. And by the way, we take a peg out of what Alabama's built down there. And so it's playing defense. You know, Bruce Pearl, obviously, you know as well as anybody, Chuck, being an Auburn guy, Auburn has never been as relevant over a sustained period in hoops they are with Pearl. They had their moments here or there, but they've never been able to sustain being a tournament-level team, much less a Final Four team this. So you've got to hold on to him because every time there's a Big Ten job or a premier job somewhere else, as long as they don't mind the issues that come with Pearl, everything else, they say, oh, we'll go and get this guy because Auburn won't spend the money to keep him. They don't care about basketball like we do. And so people at Louisville, even right now, are saying, oh, we get Bruce Pearl. They can't, but they think they can.
Yeah, and it was Wesley Person every so often. It was Chris Morris, if you remember him. Chris Porter. Auburn, you know when they were good, Heath? They were SEC good most times. They're national good now with Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, I mean, they can get in for any recruit they want. And beyond that, Pearl is one of the only coaches in college basketball at this point that is a bona fide personality. That sport has lost so many people between Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim. They have lost a lot of personalities, and some more of the personalities are probably going to be leaving sooner rather than later. A guy like Tom Izzo doesn't feel like he's going to be coaching in five more years, for example. A guy like Jay Wright stepped away altogether. So a guy like Pearl that not only can coach but also is a big personality, that's really appealing to some programs that, again, credit to Auburn, they're smart. They're saying, hey, we cannot replace what this guy does. There is not another Bruce Pearl for us to go grab. We took a chance on him in the first place. We're not going to let him get away. And I think for them, that's just plain smart.
Yeah, and it's also the far more successful athletic program inside the department right now of the cash programs, and they're actually turning a profit on it. It just is a stark reality. Like I said, the Kentucky head coach is one thing. Even if you told me three of the four highest paid, I would go, okay, is that Florida? Is that Arkansas? Is that LSU? Is that Texas now? No, it's Kentucky, which you kind of get. It's the Kansas head coach, and then Auburn and Alabama. So that's where they are right now. But like I said, it was just an interesting commentary, though, that Kalen DeBoer, and it's not any sort of arrogant or chest out or whatever. It's just a realistic thing. It's like the SEC forever not even having an exit fee.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over 1 million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action. The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Always said, unintentional is the most revealing. It's usually the most reliable. Chuck Oliver Show on Tuesday, 9 states and 60 sticks. Thank y'all for the blessing. We talk football, do it year-round. The unintentional, I was talking about Jeremiah Smith, and this is off the air, yesterday. And somebody was, and I was talking about, I was like, this guy's going to be a monster. I was like, he's starting, he's the best guy, and he's already got, you know, the black stripe, and he's in the wide receiver club now, zone 6. It's like all of this stuff is happening, and he's supposed to be getting ready to go to prom. And somebody, a guy who works in sports, looked at me and he was like, he doing that at Ohio State? And I looked at him, I was like, if it happens anywhere, isn't it supposed to be at Ohio State? And I understand his point was, well, like, all those NFL receivers and this kid shows up. I'm like, no, that's where a kid shows up that would be able to do this. I don't know, man. March against other Buckeyes is not the regular season, but this kid looks so, so intriguing. Want to welcome on. We're going to talk about other players, but want to welcome on 97.1 The Fan, Yonder Sea Bus. It's Tim Hall. Tim, how's your Tuesday?
Chuck, can we just talk about Jeremiah Smith, him and Caleb Downs? We could just do the whole segment on Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs because they're the toast of the town, and neither of them have played a snap for the Buckeyes anymore. But those two guys, offense, defense, woo, they got a look to them. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and I would like. I realized I was like, isn't it going to be at a place like Ohio State where a kid like Jeremiah Smith shows up and is like, hi, I'm taking someone's job? First of all, tell me how he has looked, and then I want to know the I want to know the significance of the black stripe and what zone six is specifically.
Okay, so, I mean, these are all just little things that I'm sure, you know, Georgia has these monikers or has these phrases that they use. I'm sure, you know, Alabama has them as well and all the big programs. I mean, you basically are starting with one of the great traditions in sports with the Buckeye leaves, right? And then you're just building on top of that with other things that you can do. And the black stripe removal, that came along under Urban Meyer. And that was just something to alert everybody else on the team. It's kind of, you know, it gets out in the media and then we kind of play it up too. But it's mainly just for the guys on the team to tell everybody else who's done the things that they have to do to be a true Buckeye. You can kind of look sideways at that. And look, I get it.
Oh, I don't at all.
It's one of these old-time football things, yep. Right? There's always a little bit of crazy and a little bit of psychopath in football, right? Like, how does a guy like P.J. Fleck, you hear the stuff that guy says with the mantras? I think that can only work in a team sport like football where you're almost wired to be a little bit crazy in that regard. So the black stripe removal is just that, and Jeremiah Smith broke the record for fewest practices as a Buckeye to get the black stripe removed. So that kind of tells you he's meeting expectations. This guy, people are saying that he's ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr., which I agree with at this point in time. Marvin Harrison Jr., when he walked in as a true freshman, he wasn't a five-star recruit, right? He wasn't one of, like, the three best wide receivers in his class. Jeremiah Smith, by some accounts, is the number one player in the entire class. So he's got the work ethic. He's got the look. He's got the intangibles, the size, the skill, the speed, all that stuff. So that was the black stripe. And what was the other thing? Zone six? Zone six is just sort of the, you know, you get six for scoring
you
a touchdown.
Touchdowns.
So that's that's all that is. And I don't know what the zone means. Like, you're in the zone. It's just, I guess it sounded cool back to back, but that's just what the wide receiver unit calls itself when they're thriving. Like, the secondary calls itself BIA for best in America, but they can only really throw that out there when they actually look like they're close to the best in America, which they think they are now, by the way, the secondary.
All right, so let's talk, and you can use any combination. You can flow between the two. Will Howard is a big, rough-and-tumble, good-looking kid at quarterback, and then Chip Kelly is the guy with the play sheet. So talk about any however you want to, how those two mesh, what you're understanding, what the feel is around the program right now after a few practices.
Look, I am a guy that thinks that Will Howard is for sure going to ultimately win the job. We still don't have a lot to go with. I don't put a whole lot of stock into watching Will and Devin Brown, the incumbent, who started in a, I say, lowly Cotton Bowl game because there wasn't a lot of buzz going into that one. Though the Buckeyes took it on the chin. I'm not dismissing that, the way they played against Missouri. But Brown got injured in that one and didn't really get the audition. But I don't put a lot of stock into him and Will throwing to wide-open receivers on a pro day. I would be more concerned if a lot of footballs were hitting the ground and then they looked poorly. But I will say this, there is a collection of people in the media here in Columbus that have been impressed with not just the way Devin Brown has looked on the field and the practices that we've gotten a look at, but just what kind of leader he has been off the field. So it makes for something interesting for the next few weeks here leading up to the spring game, which will be on network television, by the way, for the first time So you'll be able to get a look at these two guys. I'm sure they're going to get equal run. But I go back to what you said, Chuck. Will is brought here for a reason. I would be stunned if this guy made this calculated move to come to Columbus for 1 year and he didn't wind up winning the job. That would be a disaster for him. He's huge. He provides that element of the run, like you said, that Chip Kelly loves to have included in his offensive style. And the guy's got a big arm. He just needs to settle down a little bit and get comfortable with his surroundings, but he's going to have so much talent around him that I think it's going to work out fine.
Where's Bradley Roby at? Where's Lattimore? Where's, like, Denzel Ward? Like, just, I'm on the corner, I dare you. Like, where, because it's always been DBU, like, one of them. They could argue with LSU and whoever, and I would just, you know, fine, send out whatever meme you want. But Ohio State, like, it was that, and then all of a sudden it wasn't that.
Yeah, Denzel Burke is that guy, Chuck. Denzel, you don't like what you've seen from Denzel Burke in this past season? He had a rough sophomore year, but I thought he bounced back tremendously.
I'm talking about vaulting into the NFL and being that next guy. Don't be Sean Wade. Don't be Jeff Okuda. Who's that next guy that goes into the NFL? Like, Lattimore was, I think, defensive rookie of the year, wasn't he, in the NFL?
Oh, for sure. And now, look, I don't know if Denzel Burke is going to go in and be that, but I do think that he's got a really good chance here to get himself into the first round. I mean, he might have been getting second or third round. And that's the crazy thing about these Buckeyes, too, is that a lot of these dudes were probably getting, you know, late first round, second and third round draft grades, but they chose to come back. And, yeah, like when you put Marshawn Lattimore and Denzel Ward and you put rookie of the year stuff up there, that's a little tough to predict. And I know they had a couple of flops in there, too, like Damon Arnett. That was a bad pick by the Raiders. There weren't many of us in Columbus that thought Damon Arnett was going to be a first-round kind of guy. But I really do think that Denzel Burke plays really good football this year. He's got a good attitude about him. And I think he learned a lot from, you know, starting hot as a true freshman and then having a really, really ugly-looking sophomore season. And he bounced back nicely last year. So I think he builds on that again and might find himself late first round. But I don't know if he reaches that status of those other guys. But, I mean, shoot, they got some other safety. Caleb Downs is going to be a top five pick. So there you go. He's a safety, not a corner.
Yeah, safety's,
I get what you're saying.
Different.
Yeah. A little different. I mean, Davison Igbinosin is a transfer. He's a big body dude who came over from Ole Miss, but he's going to have his second year in the program now. So the Buckeyes in this transfer portal era can kind of claim him, right? Even 1 year with a guy, you can pretty much claim him. But I think Igbinosin has a chance to have a nice-looking NFL career as well, though I don't think he's going to have a ceiling as high as some of those other names you mentioned. Tough to find, Chuck. Tough to find corners like that. That's why that was a special little run for Ohio State.
It really is. It's supposed to be tough. And I was like, next. And
yeah,
then you realize, you know, it's like left tackles at Alabama. You realize that our standards were unreal after about four of them come in and make all conference as a freshman. You're like, oh, wait a minute. That's not real.
Right.
Tim, I appreciate the insight as always, brother. Thank you for coming on, man.
Yeah. Have a good day, guys.
Tim on 97.1. And so you just kind of get used to it and you see the memes keep coming out. And then you realize that, like, it was Florida State for a while. Florida State is out of DBU or out of cornerback U or whatever they call it, because they were more corners than safeties for the most part. As far as, like, the high-profile guy, not all of them. But then they had a three-year starter at corner who didn't get drafted. I was like, okay, those days are over. And so there's always a lag. I mean, you still think about Florida State. We're running man coverage and hanging two guys out in coverage, out in man, and you're like, no, for a while we're not going to do that. Actually, we're going to back off, and we're going to play an umbrella. And you just, there's always a lag to that. And with Ohio State, I was still watching Sean Wade, and I'm thinking he's going to the NFL draft next year. He may be the number one corner taken, and he's like a fifth or sixth rounder. And that was after Okuda had been a top five pick and to Detroit. So even kind of local-ish. And after not even his rookie deal was up, they're like, yeah, we're not really confident in you. So injuries are a different thing. But it just, you were used to the NFL going to Columbus and finding some of the best corners in the NFL. And it just, it's not the case anymore. So they're looking for a turnaround as well, because it's always something to sell. So, all right, we will break, and my gosh, got to wrap up next.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show wrapping up on this Tuesday. Busy day on the Ducks and Newsmaker line. Had Hack Green on from 1010XL down in Jacksonville. Our truest reporter for Georgia Tech from Rivals, Kelly Quinlan. Talked about on field with Haynes King and the defense getting better, but also the coaching staff, just a lot of changeover. And then also sort of back end off field personnel. So Brent Key getting it done in a big way. And then truest reporter for Ohio State from 97.1 FM there in Columbus. It's Tim Hall. He hosts the Buckeye Show, folks, so he knows what he's doing. So that's the Duncan Newsmaker lineup for today. South Carolina, we were talking about them and their quarterback depth chart and history and resume and how they really do like Lenora Sellers going forward. Talking about that earlier in the program, well, there is another category, and that's all speculation. We just have to wait and see how that plays out. There's another category, a very critical, and I'll say emerging category. South Carolina, they might not be just the best in the SEC in this. They might also be best in their state, and that's a big problem for Clemson. What do these three cities have in common? Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Columbia, South Carolina. If you're thinking, Chuck, not much. I don't know. Los Angeles has, what would you guess Los Angeles has? Like 15 million people in their whatever, 11 county, 5 county, whatever their area is. Philadelphia is maybe the sixth biggest city in the United States. I don't know. Columbia, South Carolina has 137,000 people in it. Those are the three cities that are hosting the Rivals in Red three-team round robin among a larger European Premier League invasion coming this summer. There are three games involving, among these teams, Liverpool and Man U. Arsenal will be the third. I guess they all wear red. I don't know. But this particular subset of games is going to be huge, particularly Man U and Liverpool. My goodness. Like, that's viewed as kind of the cherry game of this round robin. Like, of all the games, the subset is considered the really good stuff. And then of those, Man U and Liverpool, you're like, all right, that's the one you really want. And when the organizers of this tour talk to whoever may want to host a game, considered all the pitches and all the available facilities and everything about it, they chose Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and Columbia, South Carolina. This August, Columbia is going to host a soccer game. I believe a football match with a U. Maybe it's got the little two dots over the U. I don't know. But they seat 78,000 in Williams-Brice. And the 78,000 tickets for that day in August at Willie B, where I'm going to tell you two things. It's going to be hot and it's going to be really humid. 78,000 tickets, they were sold in 3 hours of public sale. So if you're wondering, like, how in the world could that happen? Did somebody owe a favor? No, just Columbia had just spent, like, literally, like, $100 million or so on what Will Muschamp, not to his own advantage, ultimately, but he kept saying, game changer, game changer, game changer. Well, he got the facilities. Like, that was his word. Go search Will Muschamp facilities, quote, game changer. It turns out that the facilities, everybody's like, wow, these are nice, but then it didn't actually change the football, so he got fired. But they got nice facilities, and they've got a big, giant 78,000-seat stadium. And, I mean, come on, we're in the South, and it's football. The turf you give those kids, it's going to be the just plushest. Folks, I have been on an SEC field, like, before week one. I have been on an SEC field before. Heath, I was in Death Valley. I'll tell you, I was in Death Valley. I reached down with both hands and tried to pull some grass up, and I couldn't do it. I mean, it's the best that there is. And so they talked to the – they had the tour operators in charge of these games from the European Premier League, came in, gave them the True Love Tour, showed them everything, let them try to yank the grass up. All of this stuff happened. And then L.A. got a game. Philadelphia got a game. Do you know who wanted a game? Miami, Jacksonville, Atlanta, Dallas, Kansas City, Columbia, South Carolina got it. 78,000 tickets gone in 3 hours. Now, whether it's Man U in Liverpool at Willie B, whether it's Taylor Swift at Death Valley, which we that happened, right? We understand that. She came out in gold glitter in Baton Rouge, and everyone was like, oh, my gosh, Taylor Swift's at Death Valley. Are we aware of what goes on sale this Saturday? George Strait, well, I'm going to take that back, actually. What is scheduled to go on sale Saturday? George Strait has a concert scheduled for Kyle Field in June, I believe. When I say that the tickets will go on sale Saturday, tickets for the general public will go on sale Saturday. It's already sold out, folks, essentially. They had five staggered levels of rollout: American Express Premier, American Express Early, American Express, the George Strait Fan Club, yeah, whatever. Five staggered levels over like 12 hours this past Friday, two more yesterday, and then finally, earlier today, actually, A&M faculty and students. What's Kyle Field hold, like 90-something thousand? So today, the faculty and students and everybody can now buy two tickets. Okay, then Saturday, tickets go on sale to the public. There won't be any, okay? There are none left at Kyle Field, George Strait. It's going to sell like 100,000 tickets because it seats what it seats for football. But you know what you don't need for a George Strait concert? Like 90 yards of the field. And so those are the really expensive seats. There are, and none of them will be available. This is how you top off the budget. Do you know how much money? I bet Heath knows. Do you know how much money? This is everybody except Heath. Do you know how much money South Carolina projected to lose over the COVID year versus like February of 2020 versus like a year and a half later? They look back at, all right, how much did we lose? What was the haircut? 50, not 15, $50 million. Difference between what was there and then someone just like life, fate, rolled you a seven, whoosh, $50 million in flames. This is how you stay in business. Either way, Clemson, Cross State, Clemson says we're exploring it. Y'all need to stop the Hamlet routine, folks. Enough walking around thinking about stuff. Some things are easy, like take transfers. And, like, if you can host Taylor Swift, host Taylor Swift. All right? Like, some of this stuff you don't have to contemplate so much. At South Carolina, they're like, yeah, we want a European Premier League. Are you sure you can sell the tickets? We feel pretty good about it. Heath, you knew all of this stuff going on over there. That blew my mind. It's a pile of money. All you have to do is reach down and pick it up. And South Carolina was like, we'll do it. Clemson is like, we'll think about it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, too, because it's a little bit of a role reversal, because famously, when the Panthers came to Charlotte, they did not, of course, have a stadium built for them. And so their first year, they needed to play somewhere else. And given that Columbia is close by, only about 90 minutes or so from a lot of the area, less than that, depending on what suburb or part of Charlotte you live in, they came to Williams-Brice first. And South Carolina said, no, you can't play your NFL games that will attract nationwide attention in our stadium. You're competing with us. We don't want to compete with you for dollars. You can't do it. And so they played at Clemson. So it's an interesting role reversal. The AD also, at one point, I was told, turned down the Rolling Stones. Same concept. Yep. We don't want to damage the turf. So Columbia now maybe has it figured out, and those folks them. Do not. Chuck, have you seen the latest article about Nick Saban that has been published? Chris Lowe has kind of established himself as sort of the Saban correspondent here for these 3 months or so.
Is he like Ahmad Rashad for Michael Jordan back in the day, or Pedro Gomez with Bonds?
It seems that way. And, you know, look, Chris is really good at what he does, and so his pieces are always interesting. And I think there are people kind of curious about, all right, so is Nick going to start kind of bouncing off the walls that he's not at a spring practice right now or what? But here was – I've just always found it fascinating – there are some coaches that you talk to that feel like they do, in fact, still live in the world we live in. You know, they have some idea who Taylor Swift is. They might not love Taylor Swift, but they know who she is. Nick Saban, in the piece, talks about, somebody points out to him, Rama Jamas. Chuck, you've been over to Tuscaloosa. You're probably familiar with Rama Jamas. For those who are not, it's been there since 1996. Saban's office faces Rama Jamas. When it was pointed out to Saban, you got to view Rama Jamas. Saban's response, what is that place? Has it been there for a long time? I mean,
every day you walked into your office.
I mean,
it literally is around the corner. It's around the corner.
How do you not know about that? Like, how focused do you have to be?
I would say it is the closest thing with a business license to the stadium. Like, it literally is across, like, catty corner. And it's good food, too, man. It ain't hell. It's a plate of heart disease, but it's good stuff, man. All right. Wraps it up on a Tuesday. Meet David Heath. Back in 22 hours.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over a million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action. The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.